This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. Beans rallied about 20 cents from session lows, and May corn was up 8 cents from the low of the day. Man, that's a whole lot more exciting than the fractionally mixed prices on the settlement, isn't it?
Live from the edge of the weekend via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Chris Swift from Swift's Trading Company. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
From the edge of the weekend, huh?
Is that's that right,
where
baby.
We're at?
You we're know, almost there it, to, again.
To me, it looks like more than a weekend. We may be on the edge of a week off.
What you mean we, Flory?
Yeah, man. Yes, I am going to be away from the microphone next week, taking a little bit of time.
Yes.
Gonna do a little ice fishing is what I'm hoping. Got to go a little bit further north to get that done, but that's okay. We're going to do that. Yeah. We've got some, it's going to be a lot of fun next week.
I'm looking forward to it. Big Apple Joe deserves a ton of credit. He's been working his tail off to come up with some ideas for us, to come up with some super smart people, some super interesting topics and guests for next week.
Yeah.
I'm going to be around just to sort of keep her out of the rhubarb for most of it.
Right.
I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. You know, it's a radio stew he's cooking
right.
up.
Right. On Monday, we normally have Machinery Pete on, have a conversation with him. But you know, sometimes you wonder what he really wants to get into and some of the issues. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna find out on Monday because he's going to have two guests on that you and Greg are going to talk with. Tuesday, Haney is going to be the guest host for the morning, and he's got some very interesting conversations that we are lining up. Thursday is still a little bit up in the air, but it looks like Wiesmeyer is going to be in with a couple of people that he wants to have a conversation with.
We'll get him. So, he just wants us to wine and dine him a little bit before he agrees. It's fine. Joe, take him to dinner or something.
Right. All right, man. Yeah, it's going to be good to get away. And of course, Ted Seifried, Joe Vaklovic, and Bubba are going to be guest host in the afternoons next week.
Yeah.
But it's a good thing. I tell you what, with all three of those guys, it's a good thing you're going to be around to keep things between the ditches, dude.
Like I said, keep her out of the rhubarb. If we can get to Friday afternoon and she's out of the rhubarb, my job is complete. So,
yeah, you're right.
We'll see.
You
no
are
guarantees.
Absolutely right. Okay, man, let's go ahead and get to it. What happened in the markets?
Well, Chip, the potential for much-needed moisture in the U.S. Central and Southern Plains capped upside price potential in wheat futures this week. Traders have taken note of the increased export taxes on Russian wheat, but the strength of the U.S. dollar has stopped the U.S. from attracting export demand. Freight costs out of the U.S. are also sending demand to other exporters. July SRW wheat futures opened higher, but traded lower for much of the session. The new crop contract posted a new low close for March and is set to test support around the 625 level in the near term. July hard red wheat, a penny and a quarter lower, 608 and three quarters. July soft red slipped 3.5 cents to 632. September spring wheat, 0.75 cents higher at 648 and one quarter. And I got to bring up this with the freight costs. Now, this isn't news. It's not surprising. It's something that's sort of been underlying the news here, but this is becoming a bigger and bigger deal, right down to the availability of vessels, by what I've seen today.
Absolutely, it is. And the freight costs are high for a couple of reasons. First thing we got to get the product to export locations, and the demand for rail space is incredible. Right. Mm-hmm. So we've got that going on. And then with the loadouts for corn, the loadouts for soybeans. Dude. It's just tough for wheat to find some space or some relief in here. So mm-hmm. it's kind of a tough situation. Now, listen to the price changes on the week for the different flavors. The SRW contract was down 11.25 cents, the July. The HRW contract was down 23 cents. The spring September contract was off 8.5 cents. It's that moisture that's coming to western Kansas, Colorado, western Nebraska, maybe into the panhandle that put the pressure on that HRW contract this week.
Well, the lack of an increase in the corn export estimate in Tuesday's supply and demand update was a roadblock to higher prices for the second half of the week. The chance for some rains in Argentina also limited buying interest, and planting progress on Brazil's Safrina corn crop were also sources of price pressure. Bull spreading was back in favor in the corn market today, but much of that was simply profit-taking and the unwinding of bear spreads. December corn futures advanced through resistance at 480 last Friday, but the rally was stopped cold by 485 in each session this week.
Yeah.
May corn futures 0.5 cent higher, 539. July up 0.25 cents today, 528.5. Deese corn closed at 478.75, down 4.75 cents, Chip.
Deese corn knocking on the door at 485 a lot this week and hasn't been able to get anybody to answer that door yet and open things up. On the week, you know, like we said, the bull spreads worked today, but on the week, May corn was off 6.5 cents. Deese corn was down 2.75 cents. So bear spreads won on the week.
Well, China's feed demand has become a source of uncertainty for the grain markets again. African swine fever is reportedly making its way through some of the new finishing and farrowing houses and is threatening to further delay the rebuilding of the hog herd. The setback from all-time highs in Chinese meal prices weighed on U.S. meal futures, but soybean oil futures continued to push to the upside. The potential for rains in Argentina and harvest progress in Brazil's northern production areas also limited buying interest in bean futures this week. May soybean futures, 0.25 cent lower, 14.13¼ today. July beans firmed, 1 cent, 14.02½. Noby beans, 12.43 at the close, and 3/4 at the close. That one's steady, Chip.
Yeah. Okay, May beans on the week down 16.75 cents. November beans down just 3.5 cents. We've got the price ratio, the corn bean price ratio today, 2.6 versus 2.59 last Friday.
May cotton futures started the week with an upside price gap, closed limit down on Tuesday, tested support at 83 cents on Wednesday, and then clawed back most of Tuesday's losses on Thursday and ended the week with an inside trading day. And after all of that, today's close was just 20 ticks below last Friday's close. It's a long way to get there.
It is.
Today, May cotton was 79 points lower, 87.56. December cotton fell 69 points to 84.20. A story you almost can't even read in the cotton market this week.
Yeah, it was a big move, no doubt, and down just 20 ticks on the week.
April live cattle futures once again traded on both sides of 119. The spot month is maintaining a solid premium to the cash market, but the stubbornness of the cash market to move up from 114 has made it difficult for futures to move higher. April live cattle 47.5 higher, 119 even. June cattle up 75, 120.42½. April feeders $1.95 higher, 143.22½. And on the snout side, after sprinting to new contract highs yesterday, lean hog futures consolidated near that high today. April lean hogs a dime lower today, 91.40. June hogs down 12.5, 99 bucks on the snout.
And on the week, April live cattle down 2.5 cents. April feeder cattle up $4.20. And the big winner for the week, April lean hogs up $4.22.5. We've got Chris Swift next. Adverse weather conditions paired with some herbicides can cause crop injury early in the season. Today I'm joined by Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Steve, why are these crop-safe corn herbicides so important in preventing that early season injury?
As most of us know, we've had quite a few curveballs from Mother Nature these last few years, especially 2019, making it even more important for growers to assess their weed management program to ensure it can adapt. Much of the Corn Belt often faces cold temperatures and rain-delayed planting, which can really impact the ability for growers to apply their pre-emergent herbicides effectively and timely. Fortunately, there are flexible, crop-safe herbicides on the market that will both help crops withstand unpredictable weather and protect them from those yield-robbing weeds.
Okay, cool. So the considerations that we should be thinking about when we're selecting a crop-safe product, go through that.
Firstly, it's critical that growers use a corn herbicide that has been proven to deliver excellent pre- and post-emergent crop safety. Even in those adverse weather conditions, some may not know that not all products include a crop safener. And even if they do, particularly in the case of some generic products, it's unknown what safener is being used or at what rate.
Okay, it's all good, but it's still got to yield. So for a grower looking to not only protect their crops, but also maximize yield potential, what do you recommend?
Well, only Acuron corn herbicide has proven crop safety. That's because it provides excellent pre-emergent and post-emergent crop safety across a wide range of soil types, weather conditions, and plant genetics, so really in any environment. Growers can enjoy application flexibility from 28 days pre-plant, including burn down, up to 12-inch corn. And even in cool, wet conditions, Acuron is unlikely to cause crop injury when used according to the label rate. Best of all, it's a dependable, easy-to-use formulation that contains a proven crop safener called Binoxicor for improved crop safety. So Acuron's our go-to herbicide.
Excellent, Steve. Thank you. To find out how crop safety could impact your revenue potential and to see how Acuron can provide an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre to your yield, try Syngenta's online calculator at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome back. Davis, you know, I said yes. April lean hogs on the week were up $4.22. That's
you mentioned
4.85%.
By percentage, is that our biggest gainer on the week? Is that,
yeah.
Is that
yeah.
best
4.85%. That was a big move. April feeder cattle up 3.02%.
Okay.
On the downside, yeah, that goes to July HRW wheat down 3.64%. But, boy, that was an impressive move in hogs. Now, the one that I don't have on here, of course, is soybean oil. And I just want to...
That could be telling.
That market is absolute. Meal just got pounded, and oil didn't care. Just didn't care. Just kept charging to the upside, and that is a bottom left, top right, going parabolic type market in the soy complex right now. And I don't know how all of that is going to end, but when it does wash out, it's going to be quite the spectacle, I do believe.
Well, yeah, parabolic moves are not known for their gentle finishes, are they?
No, they are not. Okay, let's get to the conversation with Chris Swift from Swift Trading Company. He joins us right now. Chris, it is good to talk with you again. How are you?
Chip, I'm doing great, sir. Good afternoon to you.
Oh, great. How's things, everything okay down there in Nashville?
It is. The governor of Tennessee announced this morning that Tennessee was open and ready for business.
Oh, man. Broadway's going to get crazy again by this summer, isn't it?
Yeah, it's already started.
Yeah. Good. That's you know, a lot of this leads right into one of the things that I wanted to talk with you about, Chris. And we spent some time this morning in the first hour of the free-for-all talking about consumer confidence and where we are with consumer confidence. It feels like it's coming back and coming back quickly, doesn't it, Chris?
It does. And I think over the last 4 or 5 months through the Christmas time frame and the early part of this year, some of the shifts that we've seen in discretionary spending habits become solidified. So we know that through the past 8-9 months after the COVID hit, we began to learn how we were going to live under these particular conditions, and we made adjustments to our lifestyles and adjustments to our discretionary spending habits. We seem to have grown that through the Christmas time frame and through this time frame, and now that summer's here, there is an expectation that it will blossom even further.
Right. Right. You know, Davis, jump in here on this, because a couple of times you mentioned that you went out for a steak with your daughter this just recently. Was it just this week that you did that?
It was Saturday night, yeah, over
Saturday
the weekend.
Night. Yeah. Yep. And it was just it was just so much fun to get out and be around people again.
Well, yeah.
Chris,
go ahead.
This conversation about, you know, it's almost pent up demand for socializing, right? That's going to have an impact on our markets.
Sure, absolutely. And everybody, we are social creatures. So no doubt we like to be out and about in public and view those things. And that does have a tendency to bring back our hospitality industry, our restaurant industry. And, here in Nashville, we have the live music venues and several of them. And it's nothing any funner than to go out there and eat a good hamburger and then walk around listening to a bunch of good music.
Yeah. Heck, you know, you can have a good hamburger, but you can slide a good fried bologna sandwich in there, too.
Absolutely.
All this pent-up demand, it's going to get people out in restaurants. Are we seeing anything from Florida, where we're basically open, from Texas, where we're open? Are we seeing anything from those states where they have tried to open up the economy more fully? Iowa's one of them. That would suggest that we will see this surge in demand that people are anticipating?
Not that I know of. I wouldn't know where to retrieve those numbers to see if there has been any kind of better increase in participation in restaurants or stuff. But what I will say is what we're looking at in the futures market versus what we have is that pent-up demand. People believe that pent-up demand is going to be there, and it will drive the prices of cattle higher. So they have now rushed into the future and put this enormous premium onto the futures market. And now we have to, in real life, we have to find that increased consumer demand, and we've got to get a short enough cattle supply where that premium can be met. I think it's going to take a combination of the two, not just the pent-up demand to come, but you're going to have some shrinkage of supplies because we've not seen any shrinking of supplies yet.
Yeah, the cash market's been winning, hasn't it? It's been pulling the futures market down. Even though that futures market tries to maintain or has maintained a premium to the cash, when everything's said and done, futures have been dropping back to cash. Is that a fair statement?
Well, over the last 5 years, we have been trading mostly a positive basis. So there's been a combination of the futures moving a little bit higher and the cash market moving a little bit lower. In this particular case, we've only seen the February as the last contract, and the February slid down to where the cash market was.
Okay.
We're still trading 114 cash, as best I understand, this week. April at literally 119. There's $5 right there that's going to converge in the next 6 weeks. Now, that's really not that wide of a price to do it, but the noted thing is how much lower that price is than the June contract. So not only do we have a different change from our basis being positive for the last 3 to 4 years to now negative this first year in a different change, but we're seeing some very oddities. I can't recall, even though I won't say that it never has, but I do not recall ever seeing the June contract trade over the April while the April is still trading. Now, I have seen years, April goes off the board, June supersedes that price. But while they're both trading, I don't recall that I've ever seen it, and now you do. So, again, we have a difference in the opinions of what we foresee out there. And no doubt the pent-up will come, and no doubt we've got the money with the $1.9 trillion coming.
Yeah.
But that also impacts everything else. Gasoline prices are higher. Retail food prices are higher. So when I go out and now I get ready to put that pent-up demand to use, everything is higher. So how much of that really goes towards an increase in either beef purchases or the amount of beef that I'm going to consume per week?
Okay. I think I'm convinced of this upcoming demand that it's going to be impressive. But boy, when you look back over the last 12 months, and it was right at a year ago that we started to get into the lockdowns. And when you look back over the last 12 months, the amount of beef that we went through, Chris, is still awfully impressive, isn't it?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Had the COVID not happened, we would probably be in better shape, and we may be trading in the 120s, 130s now. But there is still, we've not changed the supplies of cattle, hardly any at all. From the January inventory report that we received over the last couple of years, we know that placements of heifers have been running at the 38% level. That tells you that they're holding those heifers back for breeding, and that just keeps the herd size at least equal, if not actually expanding a little bit as we get into the end of 2021.
Okay. All right. So take a look at those dry conditions out in cow-calf country right now. Is that going to have much of an impact on producers' willingness to hold some heifers back?
Yes, it will. So we already know that 38% is where they're holding them back now. To get another 3-4% would be a very large number of holding heifers back. So I think you would have to have a significant increase in the moisture areas. And this snowstorm that's coming right now is supposedly to bring a lot of relief to some of those areas. Now we got to see whether it does or not. If it does dump that much snow and is able to replenish some of the subsoil moisture, then yes, I could see those big herd ranges out there saying, let's make sure that we hold at least 10-20% more of our heifers back and rebreed them again. If it doesn't, if it doesn't change much at all, and we do begin to impact that drought greater, remember there's a large supply of heifers out there that are being held back for breeding that could easily shift back into the kill cycle again.
You bet. You bet. That can absolutely happen. I mean, when you think about how much of the herd we liquidated in that 2011-2012 time frame and how long it took us to, well, we're still adjusting to that in reality and how this market is functioning. Now, Chris, I feel like we've done a nice job of covering the demand side, but when we come back, I want to talk more on the supply side. You mentioned that we're just not getting our numbers down. How much of an impact did that winter storm have in slowing things down? I want to talk about that. Are we still dealing with backed up supplies in one form or another from the disruptions that we had on the processing 11, 10 months ago? So I want to talk about total numbers and what that might mean for the market. And then, of course, how do you market in the changed relationship between cash and futures? It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing today. Relief is likely for Argentina. We've been talking about that as a source of pressure on the soy complex, but there is rain expected over the weekend and spotty showers over the next couple of weeks. China is scooping up a lot of Ukrainian barley. Soft wheat condition ratings hold strong in France. Biden says all adults in the U.S. will be eligible for coronavirus vaccine by May 1. That's helping to build up the consumer confidence out there. The latest batch of COVID-19 relief stimulus checks will be arriving starting this weekend. The Economist magazine sizes up the massive big gamble of $1.9 trillion of COVID aid and stimulus. Household net worth is hitting record highs. OPEC increased its global oil demand forecast by as much as 200,000 barrels a day.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
He's got one of those back scratchers on the other side, Chip.
What?
You know, so he can get both sides.
No. That's not how it works. I don't think so. Welcome back. I'm Chip. That's Davis. We're having a conversation about the cattle markets with Chris Swift. Before we get back to that, let's go ahead and recap how the markets closed.
Chip, July hard red winter wheat, a penny and one quarter lower, 6.08¾ today. July soft red slipped 3½ cents to 6.32. May corn futures 0.5 cent higher, 5.39. December corn closed at 4.78¾, down 4¾ cents. May bean futures 0.25 cent lower, 14.13¼. And Novi beans closed at 12.43¾, steady on the day. May cotton 79 points lower, 87.56. On the livestock side, April live cattle were 47½ cents higher at 119 even. April feeders $1.95 higher, 143.22½ to close out the week. And on the snout side, April lean hogs a dime lower, 91.40. There's your quick market recap. Back to you.
All right. Thank you very much. Chris Swift is with Swift Trading Company, Nashville, Tennessee. We're talking about what's going on in the cattle market today. Chris, I was looking at my weekly my price change sheet here, and that feeder cattle market really jumps off. April feeder cattle on the week up $4.20, 3.02%. What got into the feeder cattle?
I think the same thing as what's in the fat market is optimism. We have significant optimism that we're going to have a consumer that's going to continue to eat beef at least at this rate or maybe even increase it. And the talk between the, you know, you're running out of cattle, you've gotten through the wheat pasture cattle already this year, there's not a lot of yearlings left, all those things are here every single year. So I think, again, it's the same thing. We're looking at two different worlds. Right now, everybody is very optimistic in the future, but the cash market, I've got clients that say they can't give cattle away right now.
Jeez, really? Wow. You know, so through all of this, we're talking about the optimism that's in the market. Really, the black swan or the major hurdle that might get in the way of everything that we're talking about is if somehow, some way, there is a resurgence in COVID, and we go through a series of shutdowns again, right?
That is very possible.
Yeah, yeah. So we need to that needs to be the thing that we keep an eye on. I'm trying to think of what else could maybe get in the way of this demand. The optimism over the demand that we've got out there. I always like to think about where you might be wrong. And that, to me, is it, Chris.
Well, there's a lot of other things out there. Okay. Again, inflation impacts everything. Your electric bill, your gas bill, your price of your money. The price of money has gone up significantly. If you go to refinance your house or buy a new house, price of money is up significantly. So as we continue to increase our household spending there, beef has to find its room in there. And generally, the grocery store bill is what's paid with that, what's left at the end of the month. So if we have now spent more money through all of our other expenses and the necessities that we have to have at the end of the month, that's the dollars that we have to go buy groceries with. So if that is a little bit smaller amount, people are going to look and say, well, beef currently trading at near historical retail prices and not looking like it's going to go down much, I may have to go to a cheaper protein.
Yeah. Yeah. Where's the – we can't – the feed yard's having a devil of a time getting any leverage in this cash market, as we've talked about that a little bit. But the retail price, like you said, is – near historic highs. Packer margins still really, really good. We just can't get that packer margin down the supply chain to the feed yard fast enough. And we're missing the leverage.
And that's exactly right. And so we see this in two industries now. Not only is the beef industry in this where our production is outstripping our processing, the lumber industry is the same way. The price of timber is dropping every day. The price of lumber is skyrocketing because what we have done is we have narrowed the processing. We've contracted the sawmills down to the bare bones of what we needed 5, 6, 7, and 8 years ago. Now we have a surge with another two rounds of stimulus here, and the price of lumber skyrockets. Well, I can only process so many logs a day in my sawmill to produce the lumber. The beef industry right now, the processing side says, I don't care how many you've got or how many you need, we can only process this amount. 666, 665, those are pretty good sized numbers if we've been running through for the last couple of weeks. That's not necessarily taxing the packing capacity, but it is at very elevated levels. And granted, we don't necessarily maybe have to run at those bigger levels, and if they decide to cut that back just a little bit, that begins to stack those cattle back up again even worse.
Yeah. How much capacity would need to be added to get those packers to get the packers to bid up more aggressively and move some of the leverage over to the feed yard? I mean, are we talking about 2,000 a day, 3,000? What might that number be?
Honestly, I don't think you would need one more head of packing capacity. You would have to have the demand that would spur them killing more. I don't think capacity is going to help much at all. It might help some in a very small manner years from now, but right now for the next 5 to 6 months, if you look at the size of the cattle inventory, what we've got on feed at 12.1 million, which was an second historical record for the month of February, we've got ample plenty of inventory on hand. If we needed more beef to be processed at these kinds of margins, I have to believe the processor would do it. So I'm not real sure that any increase in packing capacity is only going to go to hurt the packer. It's not going to benefit him. And right now, why would I want to hurt myself to give somebody else margin that I'm making?
It's a
cruel thing. It really is, and it's a very unpopular subject that I've voiced a couple of different times this week, and nobody likes to hear it, but it is true. Other industries, look at the pork industry now. Pork is going up. Pork has really good demand, but we killed tens of thousands of sows this time last year through the COVID thing. So we have a reduction in supply. We have seen the last quarterly hogs and pigs report had a small reduction in the expansion of the hog herd. So we see that lower numbers tends to make for higher prices, and the cattle production side of it continues on, because what are we doing? We're only placing 38% of our heifers on feed. That leaves 15-16% out there to still go into the breeding cycle, an increase to the breeding cycle.
Okay. That's a fascinating conversation here, Chris. I don't know if it can make that much of a difference, but you've heard all the stories about, I can't get a beef into the locker for another 13, 14, 15 months. It's out into 2022. Can there be enough of that freezer beef demand out there to have any kind of a meaningful impact on the futures market, on the cash market?
So you're talking about the consumer and the freezer beef? I doubt it. I doubt it. We saw the issue with the freezers go out of stock, and they're probably going to build a few more freezers, but I can't imagine that being the safety net that we all need. But you can only put so much in a freezer. And right now, if I were to really think hard, I'll bet you anything you've still got steaks in the freezer that you put in there in June of last year. They're still sitting in the freezer today. Well, I would make a very honest bet that there is still beef in the freezer from June of last year.
Yeah. I hear exactly what you're saying. Okay, so we've had this change in the relationship between futures and cash that you documented for us very well. How has that changed up how you're managing risk?
It's with a diverging basis instead of converging, it puts a tremendous amount of pressure on working capital. So the one thing we don't want to do is have to continue to meet margin call after margin call after margin call while our cash market is not increasing at the same rate. So whereas before we were using a couple of different option strategies, pretty much now, the first thing I would say is talk to your broker. See what they have to say. See what kind of advice that they could give. But just look at it from a standpoint of, we know the futures are running, and we know that's going to be a very capital-extensive trade to put on. However, we also know that the downside, we could lose everything to that. start using more just options, just the put options. And it's not very friendly, and it's not going to be as exciting as what some of the other hedging strategies might be. But right now, the unknown and the divergence of basis gives you a lot of leeway. I can make a lot of mistakes with a $22 premium on my side. I can spend $3, $4, $5 on option premium just slightly out of the money and still come up with a significantly higher minimum sale price than what I could in other fashions.
Okay. Like it. I like that a lot. Real quick on the feed side of things, do you like sub $400 meal?
I think corn and beans are going higher. I think this is a long-term trend. This has nothing to do with supplies. This is China buying clean feed sources for their hog production. I just that's what it is. When we look and say, who bought all the grain this year? China. China's the one who bought it. Why would China need that much grain? To continue with a hog operation in a controlled environment needing a clean feed source.
So manage your feed costs is what I'm hearing you say there.
Absolutely. I think corn and beans are probably going to continue to go higher. And again, what are we in? We're in an inflationary time frame. What is inflation? It's too much money chasing too few goods and services.
Well done, Chris. Man, I like talking to you. That's fun. Thanks, buddy.
Absolutely, Chip. What a pleasure, sir.
All right, that is Chris Swift, Swift Trading Company. When we come back, Davis and I are going to wrap up another week of AgriTalk.
I got my mind set on you.
The truth is hard to come by these days unless you listen to AgriTalk.
Are we already into it?
I almost thought that was going to be come on, feel the noise for a second when it started.
We are. We're already into it.
We're into it. It's happening.
It's happening as we speak. The needle is stuck in the groove.
Joe,
actually,
the table, would you?
Actually, it's not. This is really how the song goes. It's not the needle at all.
It's not. It's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. Dark horse.
Welcome back. I'm Chip. Got Davis.
Hello.
And, you know, it's an interesting argument that Chris made about I'm not sure if adding shackle space or capacity is going to move the needle on who's got the leverage. And it comes down more to what that packer wants to do with the margins. And, you know, basically what he was saying was, listen, the packers are in this business to make money. So if they're making money, why would they do something to not make money? What that means, is that there needs to be a desire from outside the big four to get some of that money that the big four are making. And I don't know if you can do it with minimal investment. And what I mean by that is if you're going to kill 100 head a day, I don't know if you can scale up quick enough to really take a bite out of the profits that the Packers are making right now and move some of the move some of their profits into your pocket. I don't know. That's an interesting concept that Chris was talking about there.
And I get the feeling, and I don't know what I'm talking about. I get the feeling that logistically, from a human resources sort of standpoint, the logistics of setting up a brand new processing facility in the current workplace environment right now is going to come at a massive premium to when these original slaughterhouses were set up whenever they were built. Fair statement? Right. I mean, it's a bigger investment just to get it off the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. But the pork industry and pork packers have proven that it can be done here in the not so long ago past. I mean, we've brought some significant capacity into the industry within the last 5 years. So it's not like it can't be done. It can be. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to do it, you've got to do it at the size that makes it worth that makes it worth building a new community, basically.
Right. Yep.
That's what you're talking about doing. If you're going to kill 100 head a day, I don't know if it has that much impact. If you're going to kill 1,000 head a day, it's starting to make potentially make a difference there.
Yeah. Well, and as soon as, as I kept thinking when you guys were talking about that, as soon as the market demands it and gives a clear directive that there's going to be a market for that processed beef,
yep,
those facilities will appear.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
I'm convinced of that.
That's right. That's right. $1,400 checks going to start showing up out there in consumers' pockets over the weekend. Some people are going to use it to buy groceries. Some people are going to use it to invest. Some people are going to use it to pay off a bill. Some people are going to use it to go out and have a new steak. Some might use it to go on a trip, Davis.
Yes. I'm going to put the majority of mine in my mattress right next to the other stimuli that I've received. I'll go out and give me some steaks. I'm going back for another one of those outlaws. Bone-in ribeye.
I love it. Love it.
Yeah.
If they do use that money to go out for a trip, when they go to the pump, they're going to see some higher prices there, aren't they?
Dude, yes. And I don't have to tell you, gasoline, obviously higher because of crude oil. But one of the things that's kind of getting lost in this whole, gosh, have you seen what's happened to fertilizer prices? How about this? Gosh, have you seen what's happened to diesel prices?
Yeah.
I'm looking at farm diesel between $2.50, $2.60 right now. EIA has, now this is highway diesel, so it's a little higher. It's got diesel up 33 cents just on the week alone. A 33 cent per gallon increase to $3.14 as a national average. If you look at this, you look at this heating oil chart since November 1, actually November 2 is the first trading day of November. We started out the day at $1.09. Right now, we are at 196. Call it 197. It has been bottom left, top right, ever since the 1st of November in the heating oil market.
What happened at about that time that might have contributed to all of that?
Yeah, gosh, I don't know.
I don't know what it was.
It's conspicuous. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So look, when you're looking out for your seed prices or for your fertilizer prices, your chem prices, for your fill in the blank prices, you're going to have to pencil in some higher diesel as well. Maybe it's obvious to say, but don't let it slip under the radar because it's happening in diesel fuel too.
Right. Right. Very good. Yeah. We were talking, just manage your costs, right?
Yep. Yep.
You just got to manage those costs. We got into that conversation with Chris, too. You got to take care of that, man. Okay, good stuff, Davis. National Weather Service 6-10-day outlook. This is for March 18th through the 22nd. Mostly normal to above normal temperatures across the Corn Belt. Mostly below normal precipitation across the Corn Belt. Okay.
All right.
I am going to be out of the studio next week, but leaving you in the very, very capable hands of Davis and you're going to need a program to keep track of the guest hosts that we've got coming your way next week.
You're going to love it. You're going to love it. Yep.
You
I bet. Can't wait.
For Davis and producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, thank you for listening again today. Monday morning is Davis and Greg Peterson. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.